10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
This brings out the worst time of us. This is the time of year when we experience the very worst of humanity. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling, every damn Sunday. I'd play a jingle there like it says. See, it says jingle. Like it says open and then jingle. You got a jingle? You got to play a jingle. Christmas from Sterling. That's why I write them on down. If I hate them. All right, you got another jingle? Because now we need two jingles to make up for the no jingle. Play another jingle.
Happy Buttercup to you and everyone you know, from all of us at the Walter Sterling Show. Celebrate the festival of lights with Sterling every damn night. Oi, 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 oi.
If you're in a media desert and you only get Sterling on Sunday, you can hear it five nights a week, Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. How do you do that? You download, I know, I'm sorry, I have to say the rest of it. You download the Audacy app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, worst name for a great company. It's a great company with the crappiest name. A-U-D-A-C-Y. You think it's that stupid boat show with Don Johnson, that idiotic ship show with Pacey and Don Johnson's. What a horrible show. And that's the best they've got. At ABC, that's the best they've got. They're all cavilling over that. Oh, my God. No, 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 no. I watched one episode. I'm like, maybe this is a psychedelic version of Lost. Maybe we're not actually seeing what the show is. Maybe the real show is Pacey is out in a coma from COVID. Remember it mentioned that he was in a coma from COVID and he was out. Maybe that's what we're experiencing now. On the Friday show, ladies and gentlemen, the Dodge Friday show, or was it the Philco show? We mentioned that there was a duet done at this time of year. You would not believe the two people singing this. I want you to listen very carefully and see if you can figure out who is singing this. And make an instant call to 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Who is this? Who's singing that? 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210 for instant gratification as you pull into Bucky's. Is that 855-839-1210? 855-839-1210. It's 1010 on the East Coast, 710 on the West Coast in Sacramento. Welcome. This is Sterling every damn Sunday. Now you can hear me every night on the Audacy app. There it is, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on the Audacy app. And there's Mark Simone. My God, Mark, you're not at a fancy banquet. You're not at doubles right now. You're not with John Katsimatidis. Why are you never with Bob Pittman? That's what I want to know. You're always with John Katsimatidis. Do you scam free produce from him? John Katsimatidis owns WABC in New York. And he's done an incredibly great job with that radio station. Oh, my gosh. He's done an incredibly great job. But about, I don't know, 12 years ago, through mutual friends, I was put in touch with John Katsimatidis before he owned any radio station. But he was doing a talk show. And they wanted me to talk to him and maybe give him some tips on how to do a talk show, since his wealth came from building an oil refinery and owning two chains of restaurants in the New York City area. I'm sorry, two chains of supermarkets in the New York City area. They thought maybe I could give him some advice. He also ran for mayor and should have won. He ran for mayor. And I get on the phone with him, and I had two pieces of advice for him he absolutely did not want. He got so mad. I said, you know, why are you having guests on? You have this amazing life story, this astonishing life story. You were working at a supermarket, worked your way up to the point where you owned the supermarket, John Katsimatidis. You worked your way up to that and then owned another one and then owned an oil refinery. Has anybody ever asked him why he needs an oil refinery? I keep imagining it's to fuel his delivery trucks, but that can't be it. I said to him, tell your stories. You don't need guests. What I didn't know was the whole purpose of his show was to hobnob with the big shots of New York City. Great. No, nothing wrong with that. Terrific. Mr. Katsimatidis, you do whatever you want. I said, you know, it'd be great if you could explain how I should buy produce. You own supermarkets. How do you buy produce? How do I know if it's ripe? Wouldn't that be incredible for him, to the owner of the supermarket chain, to give that advice? I said those two things to him. He started yelling at me. He practically hung up. He has no memory of this, which is the only reason why I have a career. And all right, so I mentioned to my friend Michael Harrison. I said, you know, Michael, I told him this, and Michael goes, What? What'd you tell him? Walter, maybe he doesn't want to talk about produce.
What's she need for Christmas? Money. Now there's a nicer way to give it. Give her own personal checking account from Chemical New York, wrapped in a bright gift stocking. $10 opens it and includes 100 name-imprinted checks. Another helping hand from Chemical New York.
Yes, you help those young ladies. It's 13 past the hour with Walter Sterling. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Wash your veggies carefully. Oh, brother. The people of Walmart, later. Sterling every damn night.
Dan and Becky Gaffney here. Spoiler alert. It was all a dream. Clara wakes up in the Nutcracker. It was a dream.
But it wasn't a dream that Dan woke up with sequins in his underpants.
We'll explain coming up on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell the story of the NYPD lieutenant who finds herself in hot water after earning $204,000 of overtime that sparked an internal affairs investigation. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Jimmy Plummer wants to be mayor and strippers on the loose later. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by almost Tom Cotter.
I'd love to see you give birth to a child.
Yeah, I'd love to see you pee your initials in the snow. We're just different, honey. And by the way, I've been up here for, 5 minutes now? Have you heard me once talk like this? Oh, you, you. Oh, you, you. They're in her bedside table drawer. That's where they are.
You and I have a problem. You and I have kids in school. That's not the problem. The problem is, at any moment, on any given day, that kid might come home and say, somebody's making fun of me. I'm being made fun of. I'm being teased. I'm being bullied. And as a parent, it's the worst thing we could possibly hear, because it's out of our control for the moment. It's out of our control because we don't know the environment, who they're doing it in front of, whether or not it's true, because at 8 and 9, the definition of true broadens quite a bit. In Indiana, a state with an unusual toll system on the roads, In Indiana last week, a 10-year-old killed themselves because they were bullied. And their parents knew. And the parents had intervened over and over and didn't get the results they deserved, and certainly than that kid deserved. But at 10, to even know that you can kill yourself, how to do that, meant that that poor child was taken to such an extreme by that environment, you and I don't even want to think about that. There is a world-class attorney named Catherine Michael, who has been on my show many times, for many years, by the way, Catherine, and she has helped my family as well, and I am deeply grateful for everything you and your partner has done. But this case was terrifying. And yeah, sure, it's Christmas time and every happy, but that family has no Christmas time for the rest of their lives because this 10-year-old killed herself. And we can't even imagine that. But my question to you, Catherine, is a world-class attorney focused on how schools protect our children or don't, or how they abuse our children. If a kid comes home and says, I'm being bullied, this is what's happening to me, what would the most effective response be from a parent to that school?
The most effective response would be to email the school immediately. You know, bullying really thrives in silence. Often parents will tell their child, oh, I'll talk to your teacher, or don't worry about it. Everybody goes through this. And that's the wrong response. In cases like this 10-year-old and many kids, what's happened is the parent tries all sorts of other things. They talk to the teacher, maybe they call the principal, but they're not creating that paper trail of here's what needs to happen and here's what needs to change. Because when a child is in school and they're outside of the parent's control, I think parents are losing sight of the level of bullying that can happen in today's society, and they really need to take that action right away and do it very quickly.
After the email gets sent, what's the next action a parent should take?
I think if the email gets sent and they're not getting the response that they need, it needs to be meeting with school officials. And then after that, and many parents do not want to hear this from me, but it's the truth, if you cannot protect your child from bullying in that school, you need to remove them. I have seen so many, and Walter, I mean, you've seen this over the years. I've had so many really horrific cases where parents keep sending a child back into a situation that really is, frankly, dangerous, with the belief that maybe bullying is like it was in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and that child is in a situation where they're either, you know, getting this learned helplessness response that how life is going to be is that they're going to be attacked daily, harassed daily, or, you know, have to endure a situation that becomes unlivable. And none of us have to experience that in our work lives. That would be unacceptable, yet somehow we're expecting children to endure this. So I really think that if a child continues to have this, the parent needs to remove their child and then take action against the school district to try and get that school district to pay for a private placement or to be accountable for the fact that the parent isn't able to send their child to that school because of that deliberate indifference.
Catherine Michael, attorney, expert at dealing with public school systems and unfortunate environmental issues for students. You said it's different than the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 90s. How is bullying different today than it was 20 years ago?
Schools now, although most parents don't admit it, they're pressure cookers. And we have social media that follows children after school, on weekends. We've really gotten away from a school day that ended at 2:30 or 3. Kids were playing outside. You may have had different friends than you had at school. There were different activities. You didn't have the same amounts of stress, even for 8 and 10-year-olds. now our 8, 10, 12, 14, 16 teenagers are under such high amounts of stress. We've really changed the dynamic of what we expect out of children, and it's showing. Walter, I mean, one of the horrible statistics is we now have one school shooting a week. Half of them don't make the news anymore, which is pretty, horrible in itself. But when we start to talk about bullying, I think that there is an image of, from parents that this is something that every child goes through, and it's something that could be very benign. And in many sad situations, it's not. And I think that's why parents need to take a little bit more time and pay attention to it. When a child comes to their parent, often they've been suffering in silence, sometimes for months or years, before finally starting to admit the level it's at, which has made them go to the parent.
And this is a little trickier. On the way from home to school, school bus, walking to school, playground, not in the actual building itself, a kid is bullied walking to school, in the playground, at recess, not actually in school. What recourse does a parent have then when eyes of the teacher are not on that kid, eyes of the teacher are not responsible for that kid? It's those interim points between home and school. What does a parent do then?
So, first of all, legally, if that child is on the school bus or at recess or at lunch, the school still has liability. It is their property. They have the duty, I guess I would say, to make sure that children are safe there. Now, when a child is outside, let's say walking to school or after school, there's cyberbullying, schools can still take action against bullying behavior, even if it's not happening exclusively in the school, if it's happening with another student. But that's where a parent, and I know this is hard, but that's where a parent has to say, if my child is walking to school and things are starting to go downhill in terms of they're getting harassed by other children, what changes can we make? Can I drive? Can we, get my child in counseling right away so that we can come up with some coping strategies to deal with that? But I think the most important thing is, as a parent, you've got to deal with it. And I say that with such emphasis because, again, Walter, I see the really sad stories, and I've had so many tearful parents in my office over the years when children have gotten traumatic head injuries from getting beat up at school, getting their heads slammed in paper towel holders, getting kicked in the head. I've represented many families in wrongful death cases where a child has killed themselves either at school or at home. And so after seeing these tragedies, I've heard the same stories again and again and again, is that I didn't realize how significant the bullying was. Or I talked to the school, but I thought it was handled. So that's why my message to parents is, do not look away from this or think this is something that every child goes through. Again, it's very different now.
All right. Now, the greatest gift that you and I can give our children is the gift of safety and calm in going to school and a positive environment for that kid in school. And that's why you and I are talking to Catherine Michael, world-class attorney on all issues relative to your children at school. Catherine, please share. How do we get in touch with you?
Well, families can always visit our website, and that is ConnellMichaelLaw.com, and that's Connell, ConnellMichaeL, Law, LAW.com. They can also call at 317-333-6080. So again, that's 317-333-6080. And we represent families throughout Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, Texas. And then we help families find attorneys in multiple other states when they have situations where they're really advocating for their child and coming up against difficult situations with a school district, a private school, a college, daycare center, or other entity that services children.
Catherine Michael, I'll put that information on my Facebook page, Walter Sterling at Facebook. You're an angel for my family, Catherine. You and Michelle changed the life of my daughter, and I am grateful to you. And happy holidays, my friend.
Oh, thank you. And I'm very grateful for everything you do, Walter, and all the awareness you raise on so many issues. I think probably lots of your listeners are very, very grateful about that as well.
All right, Catherine Michael on Sterling every damn Sunday. It's 29 minutes past the hour, 29 minutes past the hour. Coming up in seconds, I will reveal who this is.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by second dates.
I went on a date last night, a second date, and we were kissing on my garden, and a dog barked, like a neighbor's dog, and I pulled away and I said, "Was that you?" And I don't think he understood, and he goes, "No." And then I pointed to his crotch and I said, "Was it him?" And I don't even think he got the joke.
Wishing you a bright and evil Kwanzaa from Sterling every damn night.
Shad from KMBZ in Kansas City. Who is that?
Who is? Oh, well, I'm going to come up with a couple of options for the guys, Bing Crosby or Dean Martin, and for the gal, Doris Day or Dinah Shore. I'm sure they're not right, but I'm throwing that out there. I like them both. I like them all.
So man, was a jolly happy soul with a cross arm and a button nose.
Shad,
yes.
That's not correct.
I didn't think it was. I wanted to say how much I appreciate your show and your, especially what you're doing with the kids and the suicide prevention.
10-year-old kid kills herself because of being bullied. I'm like, what? And that's why we had on Catherine Michael, who's a legal expert on how to deal with bullying in public schools. I'll put her information or contact information up at the Walter Sterling Facebook page. Thank you very much, Chad. Yeah. Thanks for listening to KMBZ in Kansas City. Now, if you'd like to guess who this is, that would be great. I might even come up with a gift for you if you can identify who this is. It is the most bizarre duet ever in history of human being. The holiday season, when it comes to entertainment, brings out the worst in us. I'm Walter Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn night.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
Now listen, there's a Boom Boom Hollywood luxuriating in the weather of Los Angeles while the rest of us are dealing with 22-degree weather. Boom, boom, Mateus, boom, 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 boom. Welcome to Sterling every damn night.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and let me extend to our Midnight Misfit listening right now a very happy Christmas from Hollywood.
And have you seen the Christmas Day parade yet? Has that happened? Don't they pre-tape that like in October?
You would think so, but yeah. No, I think they actually get out there and get some of that stuff done ahead of time, but not all of it.
Now, Mateus is an expert on movies. He gives us great movie reviews from the real world. Now, let's see if Mateus can identify this song. Now, that wasn't just Bob Dylan singing like a Rolling Stone. That was Bob Dylan singing like a Rolling Stone in public for the first time using an electric guitar in 1965 at the Newport Jazz Festival, where he ticked off every folky in America. He abandoned his acoustic guitar.
People call, say, beware, doll, you're bound to fall. You thought they
I'd like to point out other talk show hosts don't do this kind of prep, Mateus. They just don't prepare their shows. They just bloviate against the Democrats. And but this took actual prep. Now, Timmy Chardonnay is threatening to come out with this movie on Christmas Day, where
we're
supposed to forget that he went to a professional kids' high school in Manhattan, was raised in Hell's Kitchen, which is not what you think it is anymore. You couldn't afford to live there anymore, with his very annoying mother who went, "Oh, I went to the performing high school, too." She actually had the nerve to say that on Oscar night with him. "I went to the performing arts school, too." Can you imagine the nightmare of having that mother? There you are, up nominated for an Academy Award as a gay man against a guy who was practically indicted for abusing women. And now his mother's standing there with him at the Oscars going, "Oh, yeah, I also went to the performing arts school." Shut up. He never brought her again. He never brought her out in public again. That was it. That was it. And now he's going out with Kardashians, and I give that about an hour and a half. Did you like A Complete Unknown, the movie A Complete Unknown, the biopic of Bob Dylan? Did you like that?
I actually did like it. I think James Mangold is a good filmmaker. I think the only thing wrong with it is Timothée Chalamet, who's really not the Dylan type, although he did do very well mimicking his style in singing and playing his own guitar. And in fact, the Folk Festival in 65 at Newport, where he introduces the electric guitar, irritating all the folkies, is a great scene in this film, which they recreate. And so, yes, I think it's a wonderful biopic. It's really well done. It's just that the lead actor playing the guy we're watching about just doesn't quite hit it. But, you know, I think the people that are going to come to this are more interested in Timothy than they are in Bob Dylan. I think that may be a truth because his name's above the title in this picture.
I'm more interested in the idealized imagery of Greenwich Village in the early 60s. That's what I want to see. That's the part of life I missed. I'm way too young for that. I would have given anything to see Greenwich Village in the 1960s. I'll tell you a very quick story. I used to eat every single Saturday and Sunday. I ate breakfast at a place called The Bagel on 4th Street in Greenwich Village. It isn't there anymore, but I ate there for like 25 years. And at Great Breakfast, but more importantly, it was on 4th Street, and it was directly across the street from where Dylan lived when he wrote Positively 4th Street. That's what he was writing about, and he could see into the kitchen of the Bagel. But the cool part of the story is it was owned by a possibly connected Italian family. You were very safe there. But I said to the grand dame of the Bagel, the woman who owned it, Phyllis Vitrano, I said to her one day, "You know, it's so annoying, Phyllis." And she was in her 70s at this time. I said, "It's so annoying. You know, that store just closed. This one opened. They're resurfacing that building. Everything down here it's changing. It's all changing." And this woman in her 70s looked at me and she said, "Walter, it's always changing. That's what makes it the Village." And I'm like, shame on me. I was in my 30s, and here's this woman in her 70s teaching me the beauty of a changing world and natural change. What other movies you got, Mateus?
Well, Nicole Kidman is out with a rather sexy movie right now called Baby Girl, in which she plays a CEO of a big company. She's very successful. She's been married for a long time to Antonio Banderas, who plays a theater director, and their life is pretty good. As a matter of fact, this movie opens with them having marital sex, although the camera is shaking, which is one of my least favorite movie making tropes. Not lock the camera down, will you? We don't want to be irritated by this shit. They're trying to be edgy and to make it more exciting, but it doesn't. It just looks like a child is holding the camera. Anyway, that being said, she seems to have sexual desire beyond that of living with Antonio Banderas all these years, and has fantasies of being dominated. Well, at her office, she sees a young intern who's about 27. He's played by Harris Dickinson. And, of course, Nicole is 57 years old now, but she does look great. I mean, she really does for 57. And she starts to fantasize that this guy should dominate her, and they start having very inappropriate meetings, and they start to play out these acts. But, you know, she's putting everything at risk, her family, everything else. It's pretty much a smutty, steamy movie. It really doesn't go anywhere because the character played by Dickinson, really the only thing going for him is his youth, and it's hard to believe that she could so effectively manipulate such a strong and accomplished movie. And I think the best moments are when Banderas is on screen because he's a fine actor and he sort of elevates the whole thing. So, kind of a strange one. That's Baby Girl in theaters this Christmas.
What billed well this weekend? What was the top biller this weekend?
Well, it's a wonderful movie for kids, which is the third Sonic movie. In other words, Sonic the Hedgehog 3. And I have to admit, I laughed all the way through it when I watched it. It pulled in $62 million over the weekend, making it the number one at the box office, followed by Mufasa the Lion King, and then Wicked in third place.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, how do people find out more about you?
On Facebook at Matias Bumballs Hollywood, that's M-A-T-I-A-S B-O-M-B-A-L Hollywood, M-A-T-I-A-S B-O-M-B-A-L Hollywood on Facebook.
It's Sterling every damn Sunday.
Dan and Becky Gaffney, hey kids,
150-year-old house.
Dan and Becky bicker,
I'm Sterling every damn night.
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to tell you about life in our old house with our eight kids. Our oldest daughter is a professional ballerina. She was dancing since she was how old?
Two.
So from 2 years old to today, you can imagine, I think I have literally seen or been in 100 nutcrackers.
And I have you topped by at least five times that many.
It's showtime for the ballet world. The Nutcracker is performing at a theater near you.
It's kind of funny. I think some people think the Nutcracker is the only ballet in existence because it's like the most popular, right?
You, as the mother of the ballerina, have taken on the role of tutu making. So our house right now, literally sequins, gowns, tutus,
okay.
Sewing machines.
Pause for
cords,
1 second.
All over.
You just made that like when our daughter started dancing, I started making costumes. I've been costuming for many, many more years than she's been alive and involved in ballet since I was three. So I've done the whole thing, all the shows, all the performances, and everything backstage that happens, I've done it.
So I hate glitter, and I don't like it getting on me. And I also then hate glitter's big cousin, the sequin.
How about the Swarovskis, honey? Do you love those? The flat back, heat press.
Kind of like the crystals.
The rhinestones.
But you know it's bad when I wake up and I have glitter, or sequins.
Right, because I don't do glitter on costumes.
In my underpants.
Right.
It's everywhere in the house.
And it won't be for long. But you see, the thing is, right now, currently, let's just look at what we've got going on. I'm working for multiple ballet companies, making tutus for multiple ballet companies. We live in a small town. Not that many people make tutus in the small town we live in. So all the ballet companies around, I'm making them for them. Our daughter's performing in Savannah this week. I just made a Sugar Plum Fairy tutu that she'll wear with the Savannah Ballet this week. And I just started the Miss America costume.
Insider's guide, whoever has the role of Sugar Plum is usually the best dancer in the dance company. Snow Queen number two. Is that accurate?
It's kind of close, yeah.
What would be the number three role?
I think you would like to claim that it's Drosselmeyer, since it's the one you've performed so many times.
Ah, correct.
Let's get back to that spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, go see it. And just know that all the scary things that are happening from the beginning of the battle scene till the end, that's a dream. So, you know, don't be frightened.
And that's your spoiler alert. To learn more, follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
And if you want to find me, I'm on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Wash your veggies carefully. Oh, brother. The people of Walmart, later. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell the story of the NYPD lieutenant who finds herself in hot water after earning $204,000 of overtime that sparked an internal affairs investigation. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Jimmy Plummer wants to be mayor and strippers on the loose later. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by liberal women.
It must be hard to be a liberal woman because conservative men obviously wouldn't date you and Republicans in general wouldn't date you. And then it's like, liberal men don't even want to date you. Liberal men love right-wing women.
Yes, start. Do that. There. Mary in Philadelphia, who is singing that fascinating version of the song? This is a duet that you would never expect.
All right, I'm pulling this out of the hat, and I'm saying Cher and Sonny Bono.
You say Cher and Sonny Bono.
Yes.
Right? Is that what you're saying? Now, Cher and Sonny, that's a logical duo. Of course, they sang all the time together.
Yeah.
Right? Right. So I said it's a very odd duo, very strange duo, completely unexpected.
Are you telling me I won?
No, you didn't get it. All right, thanks very much for calling, Mary. Thank you for calling 855-839-1210. We're trying to figure out who's singing this duo. It is the least likely combination that one could imagine. Karen in Pittsburgh, welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Walter. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you as well. Isn't it an incredible radio show? Much, much more interesting than those boring shows on this station normally.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so who is it?
Well, I think it's Cher, and this is really a wild guess. I'm going to say Captain Kangaroo.
No, it's not a wild guess. What'd you do, Shazam it?
No, not at all.
I'm really? You figured that out? You're absolutely right. You are absolutely
really?
Right. It is Cher and Captain Kangaroo. Go figure that. You've proven that what they say about listeners in Pittsburgh is not true. You're actually brilliant, and thank you very much for listening to Sterling every damn Sunday. Isn't that amazing? It's Cher and Captain Kangaroo. All right, coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to get an amazing recipe from Stephen the Baker at JB Bakery for a chocolate ornament Christmas ball. It's a brilliant recipe. You will enjoy that. That's coming up in about 8 minutes. Now, it's Christmas, and there's only one movie that I feel is worthy of the title, and that movie is A Christmas Story. And A Christmas Story was written by the brilliant Gene Shepherd. It was narrated by him, and it's based on short stories that he told on the radio.
One day, my mother, leaning over a pot of simmering oatmeal, suddenly asked out of the blue, "What would you like for Christmas?" Horrified, I heard myself blurt, "A Red Ryder BB gun." Without pausing or even missing a stroke with her tablespoon, she shot back, "Oh no, you'll shoot out your eyes." It was a classic mother BB gun block. I was sunk. That deadly phrase, used many times before by hundreds of mothers, was not surmountable by any means known to kiddom. I had really booted it. Such was my...
You and I will talk to Quentin Schulte, who wrote an amazing book about the movie A Christmas Story, coming up in just seconds. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
All right, it's 11:06 on the East Coast. Coming up in seconds, you and I are going to learn the secrets of the great movie, A Christmas Story.
Merry Christmas from Sterling.
Gene Shepherd wrote and narrated A Christmas Story, which to me
one day my mother
is the best
over a pot of
movie.
Simmering oatmeal suddenly asked out of the blue, "What would you like for Christmas?" Horrified, I heard myself blurt, "A Red Ryder BB gun." Without pausing or even missing a stroke with her tablespoon, she shot back, "Oh no, you'll shoot out your eyes." It was a classic mother BB gun block. I was sunk. That deadly phrase, used many times before by hundreds of mothers, was not surmountable by any means known to kiddom. I had really booted it. Such was my mania, my desire for a Red Ryder carbine, that I immediately began to rebuild the dike. I was just kidding. Even dull Flick is getting one, you know. Flick's getting one. That was a lie, of course. I guess, what I'd like is a Sandy Andy, I guess. I watched the back of her Chinese red chenille bathrobe anxiously, waiting for any sign that my shaft had struck home. They're dangerous. I don't want anybody shooting their eyes out. The boom was lowered, and I was under it.
Quentin Schulte has written the definitive book on the movie A Christmas Story, but he wasn't writing it as a fan. He was writing it practically as a participant. Quentin is a university professor who teaches courses on storytelling, and there was no greater storyteller than radio star Gene Shepherd. Gene Shepherd was on WOR Radio in New York City from 1957, and I'd like to point out he started doing 10P to 1A on Sunday nights. He did that for like 2 years until about 1975. And every night, get this, every night for 45 minutes, he told a story. He had no phone calls, didn't read any letters, never interviewed a guest. It was you and Gene. And he would tell a story. A Christmas Story is a misnomer in that it's not actually a story. It's a collection of his stories. If you watch the movie differently and don't look for a continuous plot, you realize that each scene is a different story. Those were his stories. They were a collection of his stories from many, many years on the radio. Nobody could tell a story like this. It was crazy how brilliant he was. And then Quentin Schulte made friends with him. And how you did it, I don't know. But you got him to join you in teaching college-level courses at your university. And then Quentin became so enamored of Gene, and they developed such a strong and positive relationship, Gene started telling him secrets about how he constructed his stories. Now, Quentin, I'd like to point out, sir, that many hack talk show hosts have you on this month, and that's very nice. But I had you on in October, and we had a great time on the radio in October. And now I hear all these many come latelys usually yelling at Democrats, "Oh, my gosh, I have to do something for Christmas." Now they're having you on, but they're very late. Everything that they broke, I broke with you in October, and then I had the privilege of having breakfast with you. Welcome to the show, Quentin.
Hey, thanks, Walter. That's funny. By the way, it was interesting to hear
that version of Gene telling the story from one of his audio recordings, where it's a little bit different from the way he narrates it in the actual movie. Great fun. Yeah, I love Gene. I loved his storytelling. I loved so much about him. He was fun to work with. Teaching with him was a dream. He was totally disorganized, but I made the course organized. He told the stories, and then he explained the stories. And the weird thing about it, Walter, was that, as far as I know, other than Bob Clark, who directed the movie, and his wife, Lee Brown, who passed away just before he did in 99, I don't think he talked with anyone else about what he was up to.
Share with us some of the things you remember in your conversations with Gene Shepard, the author, creator, narrator of the movie A Christmas Story. Share with us some of the secrets, some of the things you learned.
Yeah, and what's great about this is I can do it using his life and the movie that everybody's familiar with. So there's the old man. He's at that kitchen sink, and he's filling up the bucket because he's got to go throw hot water on his car, which is frozen up again. That sucker would freeze up on the equator in the middle of the summer. So he's about ready to fill it up, and all of a sudden he says, wait, I hear something, wait, quiet. And he hears a clinker, and he yells, clinker, and he puts his gloves on, and he runs down the stairs of the house to try to fix the furnace because the coal is not burning properly, and these heavy pieces of coal are dropping and causing clinks. Now, when Gene and I talked about that, I said, Gene, what's the story about? He said, it's about what bugs you and I and everybody else every day. I said, I don't have a coal furnace. Come on, man. He says, it's about technology. He says, we create technology, but then we can't control it. And it becomes a persistent, continuing thing that just bothers the daylights out of us. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, Walter, because I had to get my cell phone fixed. And I went into one of these big shops. I don't want to give the name of the company, but it's one of the big ones. And I went in there to get it fixed. And when you walk in, they ask for your first name, and then they put you on the screen. And I was like number 48 to get service. The place was packed, and everybody's waiting, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a Shepherd story unfolding here. Where's the humor? And then I found it. I looked up on the walls in the cell phone place, and they had these huge posters with people using the cell phones and the name of the brand of the store on them. And every person in all of those photos was just smiling in delight. Meanwhile, everybody in the store was completely ticked off. So we will never control technology. As I say in my book, we can only try to tackle it and hold it down. That's what Gene believed.
He's right. Name of the book, Quentin?
You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. Life Lessons from the Movie A Christmas Story. 20 life lessons, really, just are the themes that Gene told me that were really part of his whole worldview. Another one is be flexible. There's that great scene where the Bumpus hounds come in and they snatch the turkey and they take off with just about all of it except the wing, and the old man is there. He's been salivating like Pavlov's dogs, and he's got that wing and he's holding it up, and Bob Clark shoots him, you know, holding it. You wonder, is he going to eat it? Is he going to throw it out the door for the dogs, or what's he going to do? And he drops it, and he says, all right, to the family. He says, all right, everybody, upstairs, we are going out to eat. And Gene said to me that scene is all about being flexible. And he said to me, Quinn, it's my nickname, Quinn for Quentin. He said, Quinn, if you want to know what it's like to be in the entertainment business, you're that old man holding that wing, and you're about to be fired from one project or another any day. You got to be flexible.
There you go. All right, more stories about A Christmas Story, the great movie A Christmas Story. They always talk about, you know, the best Christmas movies, which ones are the best. And it's always on the list, but I always believe that A Christmas Story should be way at the top of the list. Elf, to me, was terrible. But A Christmas Story is wonderful. And more from that incredible movie with Quentin Schultze in just seconds. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Wash your veggies carefully. Oh, brother. The people of Walmart, later. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell the story of the NYPD lieutenant who finds herself in hot water after earning $204,000 of overtime that sparked an internal affairs investigation. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Jimmy Plummer wants to be mayor and strippers on the loose later. Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Scarlett Johansson.
Are you eating the Cheerios or what? And she was like, it's Mama on the box. And I was just like, oh, I'll show you the Cheerios.
All right, 19 past the hour, 19 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. Sterling Every Damn Sunday. Yes, we're here live. There's nothing else live right now. No, the Gold Show is not live. The Gun Show is not live. And not only that, the Gun Show has to pay to be on the air, whereas I, Walter M. Sterling, get paid to be on the air. That is the correct equation in American radio. Quentin Schulze, welcome to Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
It's great your to be book, on again with you, Walter.
Your book is spectacular. Your book, I thought it was a cute little anecdotal book about the movie until I read the book about A Christmas Story, Gene Shepard's A Christmas Story. And this is a brilliant deconstruction of how Gene told stories and the lessons to be learned from the stories, and an insight into why they are so entertaining. Now, what you were sharing with us moments ago was great. Please continue. What other elements from the movie are worth noting, paying attention to, and enjoying?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because having taught with Gene and listened to him, he would sit on the desk and basically talk. I mean, he didn't have to lecture, man. He just told stories about his stories. And sometimes, and I've not told this on the radio before, I wanted to say this for you because you were the first one to have me on anyway, but he really liked one little scene, which is just after they go and he battles with the guy who's selling the Christmas trees, and they're bargaining back and forth, and they make a deal. And the part of the deal is that the guy puts it on top of the car, ties it down, and so he's got the 1937 Olds, touring sedan, and they're headed back home. And what everybody remembers next is that they have a flat tire, and then Ralphie gets into trouble because he knocks over the hubcap and all. But there's a little something in there that people miss that Gene absolutely loved. I'll tell you what it is, and I'll tell you why he loved it. While they're driving home in the car before they have the flat tire, three of the four family members are singing Jingle Bells. They are Mom and Ralphie and Ralphie's little brother, Randy. They are just wailing out jingle bells, and so on. When they get to the end of the refrain, they let out what you know, Walter, as a Bronx cheer. And they really let it go, and they laugh, and they laugh, and then immediately there's a flat tire. But leading up to that Bronx cheer, what you see is the three members of the family that are singing are having a great time, and the old man is looking out the driver's side window of the car, and he is unhappy. He doesn't like this singing. He doesn't like the fun. He just doesn't have any sense of humor about it. And Gene said to me, you know what? That's what happens with guys a lot of the time. The guys don't have a sense of humor. He was so busy focusing on the victory that he just had dealing for that tree. And then he was imagining setting up the tree at home and getting the lights on and impressing everybody with his electrical prowess. And so he didn't like that at all. And then, of course, when he does get the tree home and sets it up and plugs it in, kabam, the fuses go. But fortunately, the old man could change those fuses faster than a jackrabbit on a date.
Quentin Schulze, author of a terrific book about the movie A Christmas Story, Gene Shepard's epic work. Please share another story.
Yeah, I will. The title of the book, by the way, is You'll Shoot Your Eye Out. And the reason is that is the most searched term on Google related to the movie. And the subtitle is Life Lessons from the Movie A Christmas Story. My favorite scene in the movie is towards the end, where Mom and the old man are together in the living room Mom comes down the stairs. She turns the light off. The two of them sit down on the sofa. They touch each other. They're looking out the very window where that leg lamp was before. And that leg lamp, of course, had come between them. As I told you when I was on previously, Jean told me one day that the leg lamp is like a trophy wife. It's taking all the time and attention away from Mom so that the old man is obsessed with it. But at any rate, she breaks it, and it's caused a lot of difficulty between the two of them. But there they are together, looking out that window, touching each other. They click their wine glasses together, and you hear Silent Night in the background. That's one of the great scenes of reconciliation, of peace from Silent Night, right there in the movie.
It's a brilliant scene and a brilliant movie. And Quentin, I'm going to impose upon you, do you have one more anecdote from the movie?
Let's see. I'll give you a funny backstory on it. The flick with his tongue up against the pole. Everybody remembers that. They're daring back and forth. And Gene said to me, you know, that's the way male kids are. And some adult males are that way, too. They're always betting. They're always battling to see who's superior. At any rate, Flick gets conned into putting his tongue up on that pole, and it's stuck. And, of course, everybody abandons him and runs into school, and he's left there alone. Help me, help me, help me. And what's interesting about that is to shoot that scene, they put plastic, PVC, over the metal pole, and then they put a hole in it with a little vacuum pump through a tubing, so that if you put your tongue up to that hole, it would hold it against the pole. Well, they had so much fun shooting that scene, making it look like it was really frozen to it, that when they finished the scene, all the kids in the playground from the school wanted to take turns getting their pictures taken with their tongue stuck to the pole.
Yes, that's what guys would want. I bet you not one girl wanted that.
I bet.
Yeah, I'll bet you. He's absolutely right. There are certain stupid things that guys do their whole lives that all women are way too smart to do. Quentin Schultze, thank you. This is great insight, but I, my friend, my Midnight Misfit, I must urge you, get this book. You'll shoot your eye out, because it's not just cute stories about the movie A Christmas Story. This is actually, I hate to say it, it's actually an academic presentation of how to tell a story. And maybe you're a freelance author, maybe you're writing fiction, maybe you want to put together a novel that'll sell, and it's always a struggle. How do I structure a story? Well, here's a brilliant movie based on brilliant audio tales by the legendary Gene Shepherd, who explains through Quentin how to tell a story. When I heard you say this, I said, all right, when I heard that this was a book on how to tell a story from Gene Shepherd, I said, I'm going to sit down and read it cover to cover. I will not stop. I must read this book. And I did. Quentin Schultze, name of the book again? Where do I get it?
You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, Life Lessons from the Movie A Christmas Story. I just checked on Amazon, and doggone it, if I ordered one right now, I would still get it the day before Christmas, so that's the best way to do it.
We'd like to salute a lady, Mrs. Mike West of Hovland, Minnesota. Now, you people think, you know, you got that pretty nippy time here and there. Mrs. Hovland went outdoors, and this is, by the way, a piece from the Passaic Herald News. Oh, it's a hard-hitting, dynamic paper. And Mrs. Hovland went outdoors to tie up one of her female dogs, which apparently got loose. And she's tying it up, see? And she noticed that the animal, as she's tying it up, she's putting the thing around its neck, it edged away warily from her and sort of, you know, looked kind of funny, a little suspicious, and then ran into the woods. And then Mrs. West saw the real dog come out of the doghouse. She then realized that she had tried to tie up a very large timber wolf.
What's she need for Christmas? Money. Now there's a nicer way to give it. Give her her own personal checking account from Chemical New York, wrapped in a bright gift stocking. $10 opens it and includes 100 name-imprinted checks. Another helping hand from Chemical New York.
Oh, cartons of Camels are sure to please. Besides, they look so handsome under Christmas trees. So easy to give, so good to get. Give Camels, the nation's favorite cigarette. Oh, oh, oh. It's gift-packed, ready to give, with a space for your greeting.
Sterling every night, inspired by that conservative guy.
We trust women to make decisions about their own bodies. What if their decision is to not get vaccinated?
Feel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every night.
Selena and Steve at the holidays. How busy is the J.B. Bakery at the holidays? Steve and Selena, Merry Christmas. It's an honor to have you here, because when I think of Christmas, I think of type 2 diabetes and baked goods with icing. How's business?
Hey, Walter, Merry Christmas to you, too, and the family. Man, we are working our buns off, literally. It is so busy. And I can tell you there's plenty of people that are not thinking twice about their diabetes, and they're coming right in, and they are eating up the cookies. They're buying up cakes. I got cupcakes, and I got some really cool eggnog donuts. And they aren't thinking twice. They're happy to be at the bakery, and they're, you know, the Christmas season is kicked into high gear, that's for sure.
The eggnog donuts, that combines the two things that I have no power over. Every year, I buy the eggnog for my daughter. And every year, my daughter comes home, and the eggnog is gone. I don't know where it went, but it's gone. She never seems to actually get it. But now, you have taken two of my weaknesses, donuts and eggnog, and combined them. These must be amazing.
It's a creamy, fluffy, creamy eggnog flavor concoction with some vanilla icing, and I actually use like a nice organic nutmeg to sprinkle on top, and that just like puts that sweet and nutty spicy Christmas taste into a donut. And it's like you take that first bite and you just want to take a second bite, and then before you know it, it's all gone and you're just like, wow.
Selena helps Stephen manage the JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Are you done with college finally, Selena?
Yes, Walter, I am, and I'm so relieved. I think this is, Thursday was my last day, so this will be my third full day of not having any homework to do for a little while. So I'm relieved. Perfect timing, because like Stephen said, the bakery is super busy. I'm really busy with family and just getting everything ready for Christmas, and I can't believe it's already going to be Tuesday for Christmas. So, yeah, perfect timing, finally done with school.
Now, in your family, Selena, is it the gifts are under the tree from Santa, kids come down, dive into the gifts, tear everything open and play, or is it one of those annoying families where you sit in a circle, pass out the gifts one by one, and people open them one by one? What's your family like, Selena?
So we definitely have a fun family, and not the one that everyone watches. You open it individually. We actually have a tradition where, you know, as kids, we would all hide under a blanket, and nobody was allowed to look at the tree until everybody was ready to look at it at the same time. So we had to drop the blanket and everybody look, so no one could see how many gifts or anything before everyone was awake and ready to open presents. And then we would all just dive in and open them up.
Then it was a free-for-all.
Yep, pretty much.
That's the way it should be.
I agree.
And there are these insane families where, oh, we have to wait for mom and dad to wake up. Well, good luck with that, because mom and dad were helping Santa till 4 in the morning. So good luck with mom and dad waking up. And then, but no, my in-laws, Well, I don't want to take up your time. I'll tell the story later. What else did I want to ask you? Is there a change in the trend, Stephen, about the type of baked goods people have wanted over the past 10 years at the holidays? Or are we talking a pretty stable product lineup?
Everything's pretty stable. People know that they could get traditional stuff like the old school, old world bakery stuff at JB Bakery, the kind of Christmas cookies that they grew up, their grandmother was making, the kind of breads their grandmother, you know, the original, you know, their family made traditionally, and the kids don't want to make them anymore, like stolen breads with cheese and walnut, poppy, Lekbar, those kind of cookies as well that are pinched, the kind that are pinched together. Mm. Everybody loves those cookies if they can remember them on grandmom's cookie tray. So, vegan stuff. You know, there's some vegan and gluten-free, so I got a couple options for that as well. So that's something that's different, you know, that's not something that I made,
you know, now, Selena,
in the past, but that's different.
Right, so you're introducing gluten-free and vegan for very annoying people who wear macrame and drive Volvos. I got it. Now, Selena, there's a recipe that Stephen's offering. It's for, what'd you call it, a chocolate ornament ball. Selena, tell me about this recipe.
So this is really a yummy recipe. Definitely one of my favorite Christmas cookies. It's not something we made growing up, but it's a new favorite of mine. So it's a chocolate snowball, and it's got nuts in it and chocolate dough. It's really soft and buttery, and it's covered in powdered sugar, so it makes a little bit of a mess, but it's definitely a Christmas classic. It's really yummy. You definitely should make it this year. And it's just really good with milk or eggnog, whatever you're going to drink, hot chocolate. Definitely recommend it.
Selena and Stephen of JB Bakery, they're offering you one of their secret recipes. These are not available to the general public. You can only get it if you send an email to WalterMSterling@gmail.com, WalterMSterling@gmail.com, and just ask for the recipe. I have the recipe. We'll send them right out to you today so you can make it for Christmas Eve or Christmas week. It is a chocolate snowball recipe with nuts and gooey things. But Selena said the magic words. It's soft and buttery. It's soft and buttery. Oh, my God. It's a terrible thing to do to us. JB Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey. Tell us the name of your Facebook page.
It's JB Bakery Burlington. So type in JB Bakery Burlington at JB Bakery Burlington. And Walter, make sure the bonus recipe, along with that chocolate snowball cookie, Christmas cookie, they get the bonus recipe as well.
What's the bonus recipe, or are you not going to tell us?
Steve the Baker's Wintry Hot Cocoa. This is the hot cocoa that got Selena through her exams. This is the one that probably got her to ace all her exams. So I made this for her to keep her calm and happy through exam time and ease into the winter season.
Good boyfriend. JB Bakery, Stephen and Selena, Merry Christmas. Thank you for being a very important part of Sterling every damn night. All right, it's 42 past the hour, 42 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. We're driving across 80 up and down I-4. By the way, I-4, Orlando, Florida. I did not realize, maybe you didn't either, there's very few greater aviation hells than landing at the Orlando airport to go to Disney World. It's an unusual airport in that there's very little through traffic. People go to Orlando to go to the amusement parks, to go to the big parks. That increases dramatically the demands on baggage handling. When you're not transferring to a different airplane, a different airline, and it's just going through the airport the way it is like in some horrible place like Raleigh. Every airport, no one goes to Raleigh. They go somewhere from Raleigh. I don't know why American made that a base. What the hell were they thinking? Or Norfolk. But people go to Orlando. But the airport was designed, terminals A and B, were designed in the mid-60s. It was designed for Disney World. 80,000 pieces of luggage go through that airport and seem to have trouble finding where it's supposed to go. The luggage system at the Orlando airport was created in the 60s, and it's the original equipment. So it has, quote, end-of-life equipment, and millions more pieces of luggage than were ever determined. And it's especially bad on Southwest, which has free luggage handling. That makes it even worse. They don't know what to do, because it turns out there are six different systems, computer systems, conveyor belts, manpower, six different systems required to take the luggage from you and get it to on the plane, out of the plane, and where it's supposed to go. Six different systems. They're aging at different times, and they're not compatible, and they can't be replaced. They have to gut it and build it from scratch for billions of dollars. I'm glad I found out about this, because the next time I go to Orlando, it's going to be carry-on, baby. It's all going to be carry-on. Walter M. Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday.
It's the deep of Walmart on Sterling at night.
It's a TikTok guy, calls himself Wolfie Coletti. Wolfie Coletti wanted to go and do some pranks, which a lot of people do on the TikTok. They do pranks, or they're doing like unified dancing or lip syncing to a Taylor Swift song. That's essentially the three things that happens on TikTok. So Charles Smith, who's Wolfie Coletti on the TikTok, went into Walmart to do some pranking. May I suggest, this is probably not a good idea, and you're going to understand why when I bring this up. So Charles Smith was going through the produce aisle and decided that he was going to spray bed bug killer on all the produce. Now, I have a feeling bed bug killer is pretty severe stuff. It's probably vegetables you don't want to eat. But how do you know when you go to a Walmart that the vegetables are clean? A lot of our vegetables, by the way, it doesn't matter where you go, Walmart being one of the largest corporations in the world, come from different places around the world. And sometimes human waste is used to fertilize vegetables. Not necessarily saying that's what you're going to find at your grocery store, but you always should keep that in mind. That's why having a little victory garden in your backyard, not a bad idea. Mr. Smith turned himself into the police yesterday. Mr. Smith, roaming around that Walmart produce aisle with his Hot Shot Ultra bed bug killer spray, yeah, he's in Dutch. He's in real trouble. Searching for clicks and likes, everybody. They see the money that Mr. Beast makes, or the King of DIY, or other huge channels on YouTube and TikTok and all that sort of stuff, how much they're making. Wolfie Coletti, Charles Smith, he faces charges of introducing a poison into the food supply. It's a felony, by the way, and three misdemeanors that include criminal damage, endangerment, and theft. A spokeshuman for that Walmart says they've removed the affected products. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell the story of the NYPD lieutenant who finds herself in hot water after earning $204,000 of overtime that sparked an internal affairs investigation. Coming up in moments on Sterling every day. Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Jimmy Plummer wants to be mayor and strippers on the loose later. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by Frank Rizzo.
You are a lush, I can tell by looking at you.
All right, happy holidays, happy Kwanzaa, Walter M. Sterling. As I was working with Santa on the gifts for my young children, my three beautiful daughters, I was thinking about the gifts that I had, the gifts that Santa gave me as a young and brilliant child. And I was given gifts that today would be considered assault weapons, way too dangerous for an adult, much less a nine-year-old. The creepy crawler maker. The creepy crawler maker. You combined a powder with water in a mold. You put the mold in this incredibly hot, 150-degree hot plate, and it would cook it. And then you would take the material out of the mold, and it was still hot, and you use it to scare people in the neighborhood. You could get burned on multiple surfaces, or the transform maker. The transform maker was particularly terrifying. Let me describe this to you. It was a metal box, and on the top of this metal box was a hot plate, a metal hot plate. And on the other side was a form, a metal form, a frame. And in the frame, you put a sheet of plastic. Many different colors came with the kit. A sheet of plastic. On the metal hot plate, you put whatever it was you wanted to make a copy of into the plastic. You took the plastic, you flipped it over on the frame landed on whatever it was you wanted to copy, on this 150-degree hot plate, and the plastic would mold over whatever you wanted to copy. Then when the molding was done, you lifted it off, and there in plastic was the key, the head of the doll, the spoon, whatever it was you were copying. It stank like North Jersey. When you get out at Newark and you get in a cab and you go from Newark Airport and you drive through the quote-quote Meadowlands, that wrench, that burning tire stench, which is still there. Thank you, EPA, for never changing it. I wonder if that's landmarked. I wonder if the stench of North Jersey can be landmarked and protected for all of eternity. They failed to protect Penn Station. Probably a good idea to protect the stench of North Jersey, which is unique in the whole world. And you think, well, by now the EPA must have cleaned this up. No, no, they have not. You can still enjoy it when you go from Newark Airport to the Holland Tunnel. In that stretch, that extension, where you get to pay $15 to drive through the stench into the Holland Tunnel. That's what the transform maker plastic smelled like, unless you use the transparent sheets. They smelled much worse. I don't know why they smelled much worse. I don't know why unscented cat litter costs much more than scented cat litter. Please get back to me on that. Why is that? But the transform maker was, by any definition, a very dangerous toy. Today, none of these would exist. Or the chemistry sets. The chemistry sets, you ready for this? You're not going to believe this. The chemistry sets had actual chemicals in it. Real chemicals. Acid. No, it didn't have baking soda. It had acid in it. And you were supposed to mix these things in tubes. And no matter what the experiment was, no matter what the book said about here's how you mix these things together, and then you will have a giant snow globe in your home. You will have a giant, you'll be able to make snow in your home in Florida. Never worked. No matter what I did, no matter how I tried to make it. And sometimes it came with a microscope. And I was supposed to look at secret things under the microscope. I could look at different types of chemicals and see what they look like under the microscope. But as you know, the only thing you could really see with a microscope as a kid, a crap microscope, was salt. Salt looked like, ooh, crystals. Wow, that's amazing. And then you're done. Then that's it. You've experienced the salt. Your parents paid $28.95 for a chemistry set that was not only dangerous, but that you would use exactly once because none of the experiments worked out. Today, what's the most dangerous thing you can buy? A Lego set. There's no greater risk to happiness and sanity than one Lego on the rug at 3:28 in the morning when you're getting up to pee one more time. No, it's not your prostate, it's that you're 40. And what's the number one rule of being 40? When you're in the car, never pass a bathroom. If you see a bathroom at a vaguely clean, almost safe gas station, you will go to that bathroom to preserve your seats and the seat of your pants. Toys that you had that would never exist today, wouldn't happen. 855-839-1210. Call me. What toy did you get that you're like, no way in hell would this happen today? 855-839-1210. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
There's no other show like this. It's incredible. We've shared with you how to help your kid who's being bullied. We revealed the secrets of the movie A Christmas Story and an incredible recipe for a chocolate Christmas ornament. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every night, lost in space. Mission control, take shots.
And now we're going to solve the country's mystery. What the hell are those drones? With the legendary Dave Scott, the host of Spaced Out Radio, a Canadian show. And yet we look forward to Canada becoming a state. Welcome, Mr. Scott.
You know, it's funny you say that, Walter, because Donald Trump had tweeted out on both X and Truth Social the other day that he was thinking that once he took back the White House on January 20th, that he actually may allow middle-class and upper-class Canadians to cross the border to live in the U.S., saying that that's the kind of people we need in the United States when it talks about immigration. And I got to tell you, if that happens, my wife and I may actually take advantage of that.
I think he was referring to the need for people to speak French.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I love our French Canadians, but I don't think so.
Based on my time with the Canadians, I don't get the impression they love their French Canadians.
They are definitely a different breed. I'll put it in a football sense, because I know there's a lot of football fans out there in your listenership. Quebec is like the kicker. You need them, you want them, but you just don't want them to speak.
Spaced Out Radio. Dave Scott is an expert, a wizard on all things UFO, metaphysics, Bigfoot, how the pyramids were built, all of the true secrets that you and I care about, pretty much everything except how a man over 40 can have a flat stomach. That still eludes me. That Ozempic not working for me. Now, Mr. Scott, what's the latest on the drones?
Well, if you notice, the drones, as we approach the holidays, are starting to die down. Now, we heard that this was going to go on, and I think there's a couple of reasons why there isn't as many drone sightings the last few days. Because, number one, they are planning on saying that we're going to start shooting these things down, and that would take out a lot of people who are playing copycat in order to scare people. You know, because all the kids who shop at Walmart went and bought those drones, according to one U.S. senator. And they were making fun of this, you know. But to be honest with you, I think that a lot of civilians do like to copycat. They do like to get into the game. They do like to mess with people, you know, whether it's for YouTube clicks or TikTok clicks and subscribership and viewers and all that. And I think there was a little bit of that. But I think also, too, that, you know, due to the hype around the drones, I think the U.S. military, who was conducting some operations, whatever those operations were, we don't officially know, but I do believe that they have kind of toned it down a little bit as well to try and keep people a little bit more sane. Now, the official word so far is there may be nuclear weapons or weapons parts missing. And so what they're doing is apparently the drones are up there trying to check for radiation. Well, people say, well, why aren't they flying during the day? Well, because the sunshine, when the sun shines, the sun's radiation that comes down and hits the earth would not be good for the drones, because they would pick up on the sun's radiation and nothing nuclear that could be out there. So that is the official word that I'm hearing so far, but there are still drones out there. There are still people who believe that some of these are UFOs. People are saying that there's these plasma balls that are floating around and with all sorts of different colors and shapes, and that some of these drones are making turns and maneuvers that that are seem very inhuman and incapable of human technology. Well, we don't know what kind of toys Space Force or the U.S. Air Force or Navy have, so I'm a little bit leery on that. But the one thing that I want people to notice, and as I had said to you a couple weeks ago, probably closer to the holidays, things would start dying down. Definitely, there isn't as many sightings today as there were, say, a week ago.
I think they're going to be fewer and fewer till about a week from now. Then there will be none. People will forget about this, and it will disappear. That's my hunch.
And I think you are 100% correct. And that's what I've been saying on Spaced Out Radio, as well as, you know, other places who have interviewed me upon this. And I just think that this drone flap, it has to go away. You know, it's causing too many concerns. The real in-depth UFO, where everything is a UFO in the sky, people, they're going to say this is a government cover-up, that aliens were here visiting, and we told them to go away and get the hell off of our planet, or they were scared by our nuclear weaponry. There would be some sort of, you know, immature excuse to this, but in the end, I've never thought at one point that this is aliens.
How did they build the pyramids?
Million dollar question. Look, I don't know how the pyramids were built, Walter, but I could tell you this. If you look at a lot of the diagrams that are drawn on the pyramids, there are some very interesting shapes. There's interesting shapes of people that look like astronauts, people that look like aliens. Spacecraft seem to be etched on the rocks. Strange aircraft, including things that look like helicopters, seem to be etched on the craft. I mean, the problem is, when you go back that far, we don't know what kind of technology they actually had. I mean, we can assume that they were very, very primitive in their ways, but I mean, if you look at the design of the pyramids, those rocks are the perfect size. They are the perfect weight. They are perfect in every sense. The question is, how did they stack them, especially that high? And I don't know if it's a mystery we'll ever solve.
I'm comfortable with the theory that the pyramids we are looking at were not built 4,000 years ago. They were built 14,000 years ago by a civilization that was wiped out in a flood or a catastrophe. They had the technology. There is no way that 4,000 years ago with bronze tools that those were built. They were not rolled on logs. The logs would have been crushed by a 4-ton block. But the most interesting and telling thing to me about that the ancient Egyptians did not build this is Cleopatra's reign. When Cleopatra, the last ruler of a dynastic Egypt, one of the things she did was she sent forth her archaeologist to say, find out how these were built. She didn't know how they were built. The people of her time had no idea. There was no pass along stories about how it was built. She sent her archaeologist, like we send out archaeologists, to say, how were these built? To me, that's the most telling.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, Walter, that you're making right there. And that's what we really need to figure out. You know, and like I said, I don't know if that mystery will ever be solved. It doesn't seem like we have that technology to read the ancient Sanskrit or whatever it may be to fully understand or comprehend it. But I do believe there was some future technology way back when that we haven't figured out yet.
Dave Scott, host of Spaced Out Radio. You can find his episodes on YouTube. Click like, click subscribe. Dave Scott, thank you for being on Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell the story of the NYPD lieutenant who finds herself in hot water after earning $204,000 of overtime that sparked an internal affairs investigation. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok.
Today, we are going to show you what Pakistani berries are.
There used to be mall traffic reports. At this time of year, on the radio, you could hear reports about the traffic coming out of the malls and and how bad it was and alternatives. And now you don't hear mall traffic reports because there is no traffic at the malls. It's not a problem anymore. And it's not because of Amazon. I hate it when they say, well, Amazon's putting us out of business. No, you put yourselves out of business. Walk into any mall in America and welcome to 1988. You've re-entered the world of 1988. Except that 10 to 20% of the stores are boarded up, paper over the windows. They're not there anymore. And then stores that we came to rely on, like Rite Aid. Rite Aid is closing, has closed 1,000 stores this year. 1,000 stores. And why is that? Worse than that, the pharmacy business is being given to a nearby pharmacy like CVS or Walgreens. What does that mean? Well, guess what? CVS and Walgreens are not equipped to handle that influx of business in a week. All of a sudden, they have 1,000 more prescriptions in a week. And you go up to the counter at CVS, as I have done, to place my prescription. And the intake person is on the phone. And they're taking one after the other prescription from a new customer. Oh, thank you very much for this. We appreciate it. All right, let's go through this again. Metoprolol and insulin. And they go through each prescription while I'm standing there rather than saying, hold on. Let me just see what this this customer who's actually here wants. And I could say, you know, I just want a refill of this. It would take 30 seconds. Instead, I've had to stand there while they're taking in new customers. And they always get it wrong. When they took in my prescriptions from Rite Aid to CVS, they got it wrong. They still don't have all of them. They're still not all there. And then you go on their app. Okay, the app doesn't work for CVS. The phone number you call, you're always on hold. Hold on, leave a message. We'll call you back in an hour. Never call back. It's a disaster. Why did Rite Aid go out of business? It was particularly scary. Well, they're not out of business, but many locations have been shut down. Let me make that clear. They're not out of business. One part of their refrigeration unit was filled with ice. And I'd go to Rite Aid to get ice because I'm scared of the 7-Eleven. Aren't you scared to go to the 7-Eleven for ice, not knowing what's going on behind your back? Yeah, me too. I go into Rite Aid to get ice, and the whole refrigeration unit would be empty, completely empty. And I'd say, where's the ice? Are you getting more ice? No, we're not getting more ice. Why aren't you getting any more ice? And the manager would kind of, their eyes would dart around. They'd look around and go, well, we didn't pay our bill. Well, Rite Aid didn't pay their ice bill. They couldn't afford ice. Rite Aid couldn't afford ice toward the end, toward their final days. But the reason the malls are going out of business is not because of Amazon. It's because we don't get the experience. We used to like to go to the mall for the mall experience. I did, at least. I like the energy of the mall. I like being able to see trends. New fashion trends, music trends. I'd get a sense of what was going on. I'd go into one of the two bookstores. What's hot? What's selling? That's interesting. Helps me prepare my show. No more bookstores. Well, for men, to begin with, there weren't many options at the mall anyway. What did we go to the mall for? To be supportive of our wives and daughters. As they went into Victoria's Secrets, which we could not go into feeling comfortable. Where could we go? We went to the bookstore. I will meet you later here. I'm going to go to the bookstore. Well, where does a guy go now? I would go to the bookstore. And maybe they had a sneaker store. And maybe a sporting goods store. Well, one of the sneaker stores is gone. No more comfort shoes are gone. There are no more shoes. The sports shoes, that's not there. The bookstores are not there. Well, right there, they've lost half their audience, or they've lost half the willingness to drive to the mall. There's no place for a guy, a husband, a father to land. Instead, there are about 8 feet of benches in the whole mall for a dad or a husband to sit at and wait. There's no more places for us to go. There's no more sharper image. Oh, you're remembering now. There's no more sharper image. What am I going to do? Go to the phone store? That's all there is left. That's the only vaguely male place. The rest are mid to cheap range clothing stores, or the thing men dread the most, which are department stores. When I go into a department store, I do not want to be sprayed with perfume. And there's no worse experience for a man than to go into a department store, big department store, Macy's, to go in there and, well, maybe I'll look at the shirts. Have you ever done that? Guys, have you ever done that? Have you ever gone into, while she's shopping, I'll go look at the shirts. You have never done that. Men are directionally driven in shopping. You and I go into the store, beeline to the exact place where we need to buy that thing, take it, and leave. That's what we do. That's it. We're not going to browse through shirts or sports jackets or pants. We hate that. And the last thing I want to do is have clothes fitted in a department store by Sal. I don't want to stand in front of the three-pane mirror on a box and have Sal yank at my crotch. It's a little tight in the crotch. Yeah, I know. Why do you keep yanking at my crotch? It's a little loose in the crotch. Do you want a full break or half a break at the cuff? Half a break, cuff. Okay. And it does that chalk thing. And then you're done. Do you tip him? Do you tip Sal? You bet your butt you tip him, or else it's going to look like a clown suit. And why does it take 10 days? How many suits could they have? Why does it take 10 days for them to alter a suit? But if I gave Sal a 50 and said, I need it this afternoon, you know what? I'd get it this afternoon. But no man wants to go to a department store. And now there are no more electronic gears. There's no more... There's no Radio Shack. Okay, we could hang out at Radio Shack. There's no more bookstores. We could hang out at bookstores. And that's it. Therefore, there's no incentive for a man to take a woman to a mall. And that's a problem for a woman, because many women like to get many bags and will need help carrying all the bags to the car. And then the car, where is the car? The wacky malls have multi-level parking lots. Not multi-level malls, that's fine. But they compound the felony by having multi-level parking lots. I came in this door. You go in this door. My car is right here. No car. Oh, it's on a different level. Oh, my God. It's hell. The smart malls would have 100% free concierge parking. And your ticket could work at any door. And the high school kid would run around, get your car, and bring it to you at that door. Even if I had to wait 5 minutes, 8 minutes, whatever it was, I wouldn't care, because then I didn't have to schlep through the parking lot to find the damn car. But they don't do that. There's nothing for a man in a mall anymore. Those stores have vanished. And really dumb malls, they have cut off their feeder system. The feeder system is 16-year-olds. Who hang out in the mall. Okay, many malls have banned them. Do you know that? Do you know at many malls they are not allowed there after 7 p.m.? They can't come to the mall after 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. unless accompanied by an adult. Well, the reason you want to go to the mall when you're 15, 16, 17 is you're not with an adult. It's your first adulting you get to do. But now many malls are banning kids from visiting the mall at that time. They can work in the mall, no problem. You want to work at the mall? Yes, come. But they can't hang out in the mall. They become hostile places for teenagers. And there's no event. Nothing for men, and no events. They could easily stage cooking demonstrations, parenting demonstrations. childcare stuff, music performances. Remember, Tiffany started in a mall. I'm Walter M. Sterling. Live on a Sunday night, Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every damn night, inspired by the devil's weed.
Have you been smoking marijuana?
Marijuana is illegal, I know that.
That's right.
For now. In a couple of years, things may change when all the kids grow up and start wearing ties and going to the polls. Marijuana is going to be like liquor, packaged and taxed and sold right off the shelf.
I doubt it, Mr. Shipley.
There's a big difference between marijuana and hard narcotics.
Yeah, but it's only a small step.
And everybody who takes a drink is going to be an alcoholic. We know that's not true, don't we?
Toys that you got that no way in hell would happen today. They'd be viewed as way too dangerous. And then things that aren't dangerous at all are still viewed as way too dangerous. Candy cigarettes. Candy cigarettes that the good ones you puffed out and the powdered sugar would come out and it would look like smoke. That wouldn't be happening today. You wouldn't be getting the candy cigarettes. Or there were actually ones that had, it wasn't a battery, but there was something in those cigarettes that if you puffed on them, the end of it would glow red. You could really feel as though you were smoking a cigarette. That was a goal. That was a very important goal. But the chemistry sets, which had real chemicals, you're not going to go to those today. And then when you tried to make something with those chemicals, it never worked. And the one that still exists that I'm surprised exists is the Easy Bake Oven. These had crappy little metal molds and cake mix, and you put it in the mold and you put it in the Easy Bake Oven, which would be hot enough inside to bake dough. Now, they did that with a light bulb, as you know, and aluminum foil inside, but that got really hot. And every time we had an Easy Bake Oven, either my sister had one or my oldest daughter, Dorothy, had one, they would start smoking and catch on fire. I don't know what they did wrong, but they would start smoking and catch on fire. Did you have a toy that would never happen today? Never happen. 855-839-1210. You can confess it. Your kids don't have to know about it. Santa doesn't have to know about it. But it's between us. My mother was deathly annoyed by silly putty. Seems harmless until it gets near a wall-to-wall carpet. The minute silly putty gets near wall-to-wall carpet, my mother would go crazy. Get rid of it. We're not having it here. And then I'd go to school. I'd come home and it had disappeared. Don't know what happened. She also didn't like any molding clay because, again, it would go into the wall-to-wall carpet. There was a time in America when everything was wall-to-wall carpet, and how you took care of that carpet signaled to the neighbors what a good housekeeper you were or were not. Were or were not. Today, there are battery-powered toy cars that a kid can sit in until they're about 9. They could sit in these toy cars and go around the neighborhood and be big stars. My youngest daughter had a forever Frozen car. She had a Frozen, based on the Frozen cartoon. And she had a Princess Frozen car. And that was great. Battery powered, had to be charged, all that. But there was a time when those cars that kids could ride in were gasoline powered, like a power mower. And they had to be started like a power mower. And they would go pretty fast. All right, those don't exist anymore. You can't get one of those. But a toy that you had that no way in hell would exist today. 855-839-1210. 855-839-1210. Why am I giving out a phone number? Because believe it or not, this is a live show. I don't believe in doing shows in talk that are recorded and giving out a phone number, and then you find out it's not live. Yeah, it's live at this time. Can you believe it? 39 past the hour, 2 days before Christmas. Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable. I don't know why other hosts put up with that crap. I really don't. If you're a talk show host, your job is to do a live show. That is your job. It's not to go to Ruby Tuesdays and get drunk on Thursdays and record eight shows. That's not your job. Now, I got a great recipe for you from JB Bakery. Stephen and Selena, they made these chocolate ornament balls that are buttery and soft with nuts. And they've sent me the recipe. It's a secret recipe. And the only way you get it is if you send me an email, waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. I'll send it right out to you. You can make it in time for Christmas Eve or Christmas. Think about that. A chocolate ball with nuts and buttery and soft and decadent as could be, and you can dunk it. There's your fantasy from JB Bakery. Why do you talk about JB Bakery so much, Walter? It's because I like baked goods. I like grandma-type bakeries. I like to take a number bakeries, real bakeries. They're not advertisers. They don't pay for the time. That isn't what happens. I just respect the fact that we have two ambitious young people who have bought a bakery. They're running the bakery. They work their butts off. And they make these great products. That should be celebrated. I think you'll agree. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling every damn night.
Episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk about a story that's been circulating in the New York City tabloids the last couple of days. The New York City's highest paid employee, who shoveled in more than $400,000 last year, filed for retirement this week and was suspended amid an internal affairs probe into her astronomical overtime. Lieutenant Quathisha Epps will retire just 20 years with the department, sources say. Leaving money on the table is seemingly uncharacteristic for Epps, who raised eyebrows by pulling in roughly $204,000 in overtime last year with her administrative job with the NYPD's chief of department, Jeffrey Madry's office. This is incredible. According to sources, she made more than 1,600 hours of overtime last year. And then you have to ask yourself, she's working an administrative position, doing exactly what? Was she sleeping on the couch in her office? It just seems to me not humanly possible for a 51-year-old woman to put in that many hours. But what do I know? I'm just a broken-down retired NYPD detective. 17 years ago, when I was looking to retire from the department, we had a 40-hour-a-month cap on detectives that were going out making arrests and doing search warrants. As my ex-commanding officer used to say, the cap is the cap is the cap is the cap. Which means if you went over the 40 hours of overtime a month, heads were going to roll. And it works like this. First, your sergeant's going to pull you aside and say, don't do that. Then your lieutenant's going to have it talking to you. And if you wind up in the commanding officer's office, you might find yourself working in another borough. So the NYPD doesn't play nice when its members don't listen to the overtime restrictions. I just find it ironic that this woman, who's probably making specialty pay, making captain's pay, put in that many hours of overtime and no one said anything about it. Her putting in her paperwork is probably to dodge the internal affairs investigation. But here's the thing. They have all her movements. They know if she's got a department car. They know when she paid tolls, when she's putting in overtime slips. They're going to check it against the sign out log. If they decide to really press her on this and there's signs of wrongdoing, she could find herself getting arrested and charged with official misconduct, not to mention the larceny and theft of services if it's found that she stole overtime. I'm not saying she did, but right now there's an internal affairs probe on it. Some things never change with the NYPD. People at the Puzzle Palace, One Police Plaza, think that they can do whatever they want where the grunts and the cops and the detectives have a heavy-duty cap on the overtime. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling every night, inspired by Kat Timpf.
Look what happened to J-Lo. Exactly. You don't know what happened to J-Lo. She got back with her ex, and then, I mean, everyone's like, she's going to be the exception. No one's the exception. This big wedding, blah, blah, blah. And then what happened? That little, she made that documentary. Everybody hated her. Her tour canceled. She got back with her ex. I'm alone in a hotel room in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I know this. What's the excuse here? Huh?
I had toys. There's no way in hell I could even buy today, much less give to a kid. They'd be too dangerous, too dangerous. Charlie, you're on Sterling every damn Sunday. Hi.
Yeah, I grew up in the early 60s, late 50s, and I have older brothers, three older brothers, and we always had BB guns and pellet rifles, and we had bows. We had 10, 12-pound bows. You could go up to Churchill Reservoir and shoot carp right in the, you know what I mean, with bow fishing, they called it. And I mean, we had all kinds of things. If you, I remember one of my friends got hit in the rear end with one of these steel-tip arrows, and it pierced the skin. He wasn't, like, you know, really messed up or anything, but it hurt like heck, and it left a little cut there. And I mean, if you could pump up them pellet rifles, they used to go into a 2x4. I'm sure it would go through your skull if you pumped it up enough. I mean, that stuff was dangerous. I wonder if nobody ever got killed, you know what I mean? It really is. And some of these slingshots, you had these wrist rockets. I remember shooting morning doves off of a electric line. I felt bad afterwards when I found out they made it for life, but those things are deadly. You put a little round stone in there, you can definitely kill somebody with it, you know?
So Charlie, are you glad these mortal toys are gone?
Yes, I don't think kids should really have that. But I mean, you know, if you have the bent to really hurt something, you can get a knife out of your mother's drawer, you know what I mean? Whatever, I don't know. But
exactly,
if
Charlie.
If you're going hunting, to hunt with somebody who's an experienced, you know, rational hunter, not just some kid from the neighborhood that likes shooting cats or something, you know what I mean?
Shooting cats, yes. Charlie?
Well, there's people to do that.
I know. Charlie, hey, listen, thank you for listening, and Merry Christmas. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my award-winning book, Disintegration. Callum only stopped pulling the trigger when he realized there was nothing left to shoot at. He lowered his gun and waited for further commands from Ro. None came. He looked around. She had returned to the outside of the hidden chamber from which they'd emerged. Her eyes were hidden behind her dark glasses, and he couldn't tell where she stared as he approached. "How are you feeling?" she asked. "Fine." "If there were other people out here, you think you could tear them to shreds?" He paused to consider the question. "Probably." "Good." She pushed herself off the ledge she'd been leaning against and climbed down into the elevator car. Callum followed her. He waited for her to activate the buttons to close the roof and send them back underground. When she didn't, he reached for the illuminated panel. She grabbed his wrist. "I didn't say we were done here." "What else do you want me to do?" Ro fiddled with the bottom of his shirt. Her fingers walked up his chest, dancing across the thin fabric separating her touch from his firm muscles. "I did always enjoy watching you move," she said. "When you get into your zone, when your body takes over." He glanced up. All he saw was the flawless blue sky, yet he was skeptical. "Here? But there's no one else around for miles and miles." She pressed against him. Droplets of sweat dotted her forehead, and her skin glistened with the lotion she had applied earlier. Don't you want to take advantage of the fresh air while we still can? Damn her convincing arguments. He twitched with anticipation as she kissed his neck. Sunlight illuminated the small enclosure, and he smelled the dusty aroma of the desert's rolling dunes. Her body was already warm, her skin flushed with heat. When he ducked down to capture her mouth with his, salt mingled with the sweetness of her tongue. They were sweaty, dirty, and exposed to the elements. His senses flooded with all the stimuli, and his blood raced through his veins. He grabbed her by the waist and spun around to pin her to the wall. Her hands urged him on, tugging at his clothing. Ro yanked the t-shirt off over his head. He did the same with her tank top. When he saw the jet black satin of her bra, he laughed. I thought you wore as little underwear as possible. Can't have the lab rats staring. Their heads might explode. She took his hands and pushed them against her chest. I'll be nice and save that pleasure just for you. He squeezed, digging his fingers into the pliant flesh. His palms moved easily across the smooth fabric, dampened by her perspiration. He found the clasp behind her back and jerked the shiny garment away. With the obstruction gone, his slickened skin glided across hers as he crushed her lips with another kiss. The slippery sensations sent even more energy between his legs, and Callum could feel her heart pounding beneath his. Prior events hadn't dulled her capacity to eliminate the surrounding world and draw his focus to her. His goal of plunging inside her sent all other conscious thoughts to the background. Oh, I think I'd better stop there for tonight. But you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Disintegration, which is available at Amazon in paperback and on Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Now, 3 good minutes.
Here's Bob Moog of University Games. He, as you know, does the thing that I admire most. He starts businesses. He has started a gaming business. Bob has come up with a game that's hysterical and brilliant and clever. How did you come up with the idea for Am I the Ass?
The way we develop games at University Games is we try to look at what's going on in society. Right now, if you go onto Reddit or Facebook, you'll see that people are posting personal situations and asking the question, am I the ass in these situations? And then hundreds of people are responding with their comments on yes, you are an ass or no, you're not an ass. And so we looked at that and we said, how can we make this into a game? There's 25 million people weekly participating in this dialogue on the internet. And we came up with this idea after lots of research to go out to the public and kind of Family Feud style poll survey 500 people with 200 different scenarios.